Blog Talk Radio.
Round up the usual suspects.
Indeed, indeed. Welcome to this week's Left Ahead podcast. This is Mike Ball, also of Marion, Massachusetts, and Harumph. And our guest today is Boston City Councilor Steve Murphy. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me once again.
Oh, great. Well, this is an exciting year. This is election year again. And it looks, is it my perception? Are you free now that you're no longer in the presidential role of the council? Are you more actively legislatively than you had been because of your role change?
I think it's about the same. I filed a bunch of stuff this year, many of it public safety and environmental in nature. And, I've tried to maintain a high amount of activity in the years that I've been on the council, and this year's no exception. Yep. So we're moving forward and hoping for the best.
Well, I should note to people who don't follow the Boston City Council, for many years you have been the money guy. I mean, everybody knows if it's a question about can we afford this or what is it going to cost if we do this, they always say, ask Steve. It was always ask Steve because you were the one, because of your previous business experience and your education and your expertise, you were the one who had the answer. So it was like you were the money guy. So you probably still are the money guy. But you have some interesting things. You were part of the effort to introduce a BYOB to restaurants that don't have a liquor license. And that did that resonate with your constituents?
It is. We're in the midst of that process right now. And I partnered with Michelle Wu, who is a newer member of the city council, but nonetheless very impressive. And we're trying to actually help business districts in outside of downtown and the Seaport area by bringing BYOB to neighborhood business districts. The city of Boston has a self-imposed prohibition on this type of activity, and it does so at a loss to its business districts vis-a-vis neighboring cities and towns like Dedham and Milton, which allow it, and those would impact Hyde Park and West Roxbury. And, I know that your neighborhood is the health of your neighborhood, your economic and your the health of your neighborhood in terms of your quality of life is directly tied to the health of the neighborhood business district. So Michelle and I are trying to promote more active business districts and get more anchor stores that could bring more people into a business district. Hyde Park already has its fair amount of barbershops and nail salons and check cashing facilities. And what we could use is more business districts. And a few years ago, the city council increased the, with the mayor's help, because we don't do anything without the mayor's help in Boston, increased the number of licenses that the city holds by 75 if those were in empowerment zone. And Hyde Park's business district is within an empowerment zone. But they're still cost prohibitive. A liquor license costs anywhere from $200,000 to $400,000. And many of the people who buy them in the neighborhoods and then transfer them downtown or to the waterfront. And so this effort by Michelle and myself to enliven outlying business districts is ongoing here. We'll be holding a hearing on BYOB, and we'll invite the public interested folks to come in and testify. The licensing board will come down and give its view, and that their view is important because they would ultimately be the deciding authority or the monitoring authority, if you will, once the change is made to the code. It would fall under the purview of the licensing board to develop the rules and regulations around BYOB for Boston's neighborhoods.
Yeah, well, I got to say, I've been in Boston for 36 years, but I lived the decade before that in Manhattan and other places. I'm just astonished at the blue law nature of Massachusetts. I mean, the limits on liquor licenses and things seem to be so archaic, and they seem to be like designed to for fraud. I just say, you know, everybody's just like buying taxi medallions. You know, everybody hustles to get this thing and scrap about. It seems really, really anti-business to me. Anyway, people should know before we continue on. Steve and I live in the same neighborhood. We're a couple blocks away, so we know, you know, we live on Fairmont Hill. It's, you know, downtown Hyde Park is our area. These are concerns. Steve is an at-large city councilor, always one of the biggest vote getters, but he represents the entire city. But he lives right here, so Hyde Park is near to our hearts, I think.
Mm-hmm. It sure is. We run across each other quite a bit in the neighborhood business district, Mike and I, and we're always about improving our neighborhood business districts because they improve our neighborhoods. And so that's an attempt by Michelle Wu and myself. The jury's still out on it. We won't know until later this session how it fares, but we're hopeful that people will come to our point of view on it.
And you brought up Mayor Walsh. I mean, I guess he's new to the job here. He's only been here a year.
Mm-hmm.
We should see whether you have comparisons with our long-term mayor, Manish, also from Hyde Park. I mean, people have been saying it's the same and different. Poor Marty, he got into this thing this last winter has been dreadful enough for all of us. But, you know, Marty Walsh having to deal with all that snow, I'm glad I don't have his job, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, he inherited the worst winter on record, mm-hmm. I think. And it's still this weekend we're talking about more snow. Oh, my God, it's the middle of March. But, you know, Tom Menino had been a friend of mine for 42 years. We oftentimes clashed in my role as council president and then the mayor's role as mayor. But it was never personal with us. And when we lost him, there was a great void in my life as someone who'd known him for 42 years and thinks the world of his surviving spouse, Angela, who's just a great person and a good friend to my wife, Bridget, and myself. So that loss, you know, he was a great man. He was, you know, intertwined in my life since I was very young and was a great political leader for the city. And, you know, he had a tremendous gut level of what people wanted and expected from government. And he had no peers in this business. And, you know, we had a spirited contest to succeed him in 2013. And a friend of mine for almost 20 years, Representative Marty Walsh, now Mayor Marty Walsh, came in and is now the new mayor. And it's a change for someone who's served at the mm-hmm. State House to come down and serve at the City Hall, the municipal level. And but Mayor Walsh has surrounded himself with good young talent. And he's a person with a good heart, a good moral compass, and the courage to lead. And he's been a good mayor in spite of the fact that he must have upset Mother Nature at a time previous to his time serving here. But he's also a good person to work with. And, you know, it's a different relationship because we were kind of more collegial, being a rep and a counselor. We're both legislators by trade. The mayor has stepped into the executive position with authority and integrity, and he has a good team. And we haven't agreed on everything in this first year, but we work well together. I think the council and the mayor work well together, and I think it bodes well for everybody in the neighborhoods of Boston if you're they don't send us to City Hall not to get along. So we're going to do the best we can to keep our personal differences just that out of public policy, you know.
You know, I got to say, you know, Tom Menino was unique in many ways. One of them was he never forgot somebody. I just, you know, he met my boys, all three of them, at various times and presented awards from schools. But he remembered everybody's name. And he remembered every – I can't do that kind of stuff. It was just an astonishing thing. His people skills were far beyond mine. People could laugh about Tom Menino's, you know, fumbling words or this or that. But, boy, he knew people and he remembered everybody and everything. It was just, it was brilliant. So I don't know. Do you think Walsh could grow into that, or is he just going some a different way? Is he a different style?
It's tough to compare the two. I think in a lot of ways they were very much alike. They both had the best interest of the people that they served at the heart of the matter. Both of them were creatures of the State House. Tom Menino as a staffer before he got elected in his own right to the city council. So he came into the job as mayor, having been acting mayor and been council president and a 10-year member of the city council. He knew the ebb and flow of the building, Boston City Hall. There's a sharp learning curve, and Mayor Walsh, had to rely on that learning curve more so than Mayor Menino. But Mayor Walsh is mastering the trade. He's a good mayor, and he's doing a good job, in my view. Does he have the same attention to people's names and things? I'm not so sure about that. Tom Menino really did stand out in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Much more than myself. I see people and I know their name, but I can't think of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say, hey, Lucky, how you doing? I'm trying to get by. You know? Menino always knew the name, you know. So he was kind of one of a kind in a lot of ways. A good man.
Yes, I see that. There have been a few things that that stood out with Walsh. You said the mayor had, didn't always agree with this and that. I was surprised to see that Tito's effort to get a Tito Jackson effort to get a committee to advance the needs of Latino and Black men and young
men and boys
Mayor Walsh didn't like that. He said it was duplicating federal effort and everything. Is that going to be revisited, or is that settled?
Well, we did form a special committee for Councilor Jackson on the state of Black and Latino men and boys in Boston. So is it a duplication of effort? There's only one executive branch. We can use the bully pulpit of the city council to try to make changes, but the changes have to come from the mayor's office and the executive branch. That's not problem, but the nitty-gritty of our city charter, you know? So there was a disagreement. It was very early last year when we created that committee. Councilor Jackson had urged us to create that committee, and he wanted to take the issue on, being a young man of color, and the city council gave him that pulpit, and then something happened where someone in the law department or something said, geez, you can't have the council dictating policy of the city. That's the mayor's job, and we already have the new Bostonians office and the Bostonians on the Minority Business Enterprise office. So it really is a duplication. And Neil Walsh came back and said that there was a turf issue here. And the council stood its ground and said, look, we're authorized and empowered to make up any committee we want to. And we can talk about any issue we want to. We can't definitively resolve it, but we can work with anybody, and that's just what we're going to do on that. We've got the special committee, and Tito is heading it, and that was Council President Bill Linehan, who incidentally Tito didn't support when he first ran, but Bill's been a good leader for the council and is working with all of his colleagues and the mayor to try to make things go smoothly and go in the right direction here.
Oh, so we should get in. What do you want to do for your when your reelection? How are you positioning yourself? How are you running for your reelection?
Well, first of all, I'm trying not to get into campaign mode until we have a campaign, which I hope is, you know, November, a week before the election.
Come on.
No, I'm only kidding.
I've been so long between, you know, I'm a warden up here. I've been so long between elections, I don't know what to do.
You know, when it gets going, and the papers will come out in April, and they get returned the first week of May, we'll know how many people have signed up for the at-large seats. We need 9 folks to force a primary. You need to get 1,500 signatures, which good signatures, which you need means you need probably 2,500 to 3,000 signatures. And if there are not 9 people, then you don't have a primary, so there's only 1 election in November. And that's kind of how the timetable will go. I just simply view the election as similar year to year. I think it's kind of like your report card time from the voters. That's how I treat it. And that's why I continue to offer new solutions and continue to work on legislation that I think will benefit all of the neighborhoods and all of the people in Boston. So I continue to turn out a product, and I hope I'm judged on that product. And then I have to put my campaign together and get people to focus on my accomplishments. And I'm hopeful people will think that you know, Steve Murphy is one of the 4 people that's worthy of continuing in his service to the people of Boston.
Well, they have year election after election. I got for people who don't know, the way we do it around here is there are districts, and that's a much smaller area. But the at large where Steve is running is the whole damn city. So you got to appeal to everybody, and you get your signatures from all around, and you got to get your votes from all around, and it's a matter of appealing to more than just the guy down the street. So people should be aware of that. Right. So do you see other big issues coming up for you in council?
Well, obviously the budget is going to be coming out in the next couple of weeks, and you know, we've had an unprecedented string in Boston of you know, of budgets that come in with less outside funding. You know, Washington is for all intents and purposes broken. They can't agree on anything down there, and the city has suffered a dearth of external funding from sources in D.C. over the last 6 or 7 or 8 years. And combine that with Beacon Hill has had financial troubles. And when they solve their financial troubles, they cut things like local aid, which hurts cities and towns. So Boston has been able to not only endure, but to thrive during the past 8 years with $200 million less every year in local aid and from the state, a net decrease of $200 million from where we were in 2003 and 2004. And much of that has been shifted to property taxes, but people haven't really seen great growth in property taxes because of the way the city has been managed financially under both Mayor Menino and Mayor Walsh, but with partners in government, and those are the 13 members of the city council, the 9 district members, and the 4 at-large members. And so I can point out things that I have done during my tenure, and one of them was having a simple conversation with Tom Menino a couple of years ago when we were thinking about closing 4 libraries, about refinancing the bonds that we floated to build the convention center because we got a favorable interest rate. In fact, we cut the interest rate in half from 8.75% to 4.25% and saved $18 million in interest payments. and converted that money out of the debt service line item in the budget and put it into programmatic mm-hmm. needs, and we're able to save four libraries. And that's just one little thing that Councilor Murphy did, just having an offhand discussion with Tom Menino mm-hmm. in the mayor's office. Another thing I was able to do was to reform the city's pilot payment in lieu of taxes.
Oh, yes.
And squeeze an extra $28 million out of our large universities and hospitals that are property tax exempt by nature, but want to be willing partners with our city in making our city better. And so we were able to get additional funds. And of course, if you don't have funds, you can't do anything. You can't, you know, everybody has a wish list of what they'd like to see Boston be, whether it's, you know, mm-hmm. more K-8 schools or early learning centers for kids or additional police or EMTs or firefighters or cleaner parks or streets or faster snow removal, you know, things like that. But you can't do it unless you have the funds. And so that's why I've continued my focus on finding and maintaining the city to be in the best possible financial position to meet the needs of its neighborhoods.
So that was a problem. We've talked before, and that was one of the issues there. Do you think that people are adequately aware of the things that you do and know? I mean, you are kind of the behind-the-scenes financial guy. Is that still an issue? Are you still too far behind the scenes for a lot of voters?
I think a lot of that is it is behind the scenes because, and not so much mm-hmm. because we don't try, because I try to get that information out, and the city does as well as to the good things that we do together in here. But I think people's attention is, their attention span is bombarded on a daily basis with all sorts of stuff. I remember when I was a kid, we had channels 4, 5, and 7, and then we got mm-hmm. this UHF. We had the little round antenna, and we got channels 38 and mm-hmm. 56, and then channel 25 came later. But we had three major channels. Now you've got satellite TV or cable TV with 200, 300 channels, and if you turn on a news channel, if you turn on a news channel, you have a talking head telling you something. You've got a box up in the right or left-hand corner beside the talking head changing with information. Mm-hmm. You've got a scroll going underneath with more information. And so I think people's senses are bombarded by information at all levels. And, you know, there's a pretty restless world out there with ISIS and Al-Qaeda and all of the stuff that's going on in Africa and in Afghanistan and Iraq and places like that, which, you know, monopolize people's time and attention here. You have to pay attention to this stuff. And then you've got your state house stuff with the T failing and Governor Charlie Baker coming in brand new and trying to, I guess, tame a bureaucracy that's been untamed for a while and work hard at it. And then you've got Mother Nature acting up. So there's a lot of things that, vie for people's attention. So that's why when we get into campaign mode, we go out and we pay to get our message out and say, if you've got four votes at large, just think of Murphy as the guy that's watching the pocketbook, you know? And that's kind of where I'm at. I'm also doing some things with environmental pieces this year. I've got two pieces coming out. One of them is we have a lot of construction equipment that is older in the city, and right. not city-owned equipment, but contractors, and it runs on diesel fumes and diesel mm-hmm. fuel, and the particulates in diesel are such that they're heavy particulates and they cause asthma and other emphysema, and because this stuff isn't state-of-the-art, They don't have the filters on them. The new stuff has filters. So we're going to put an ordinance in the next few weeks, working with the mayor to reduce diesel emissions in the city by requiring certain filters on some of this older equipment. That's, you know, we're going to say that unless your emissions are at a certain level, you can't use the equipment in Boston. So people are going to have to retrofit some of their diesel stuff, diesel engines. And you know, a couple of times I've talked about trying to pull styrofoam out of, because styrofoam doesn't, it's not biodegradable.
Yeah.
And I know that a couple of other cities and towns have banned styrofoam products. Mm-hmm. Most recently, Cambridge, Brookline before them. I had filed something a couple of years ago, and we began an education process. So we're not going to ban it. We're going to order it to be recycled in our number, our large single stream recycling containers.
Great. That grieves me to put a styrofoam container in that thing and not well, be able to put it into that one. Yeah.
And now we'll be able to put it into that one, and the city will be paid. We'll reduce the waste stream and increase the recycle stream, and that's coming very quickly. I'll be filing that on the 25th of March and hope to have a hearing on that before the middle of April.
Good.
And we continue in our efforts. I've been working with Michael Flaherty on bringing new technology to our 911 systems to speed up response time and to give more additional information to the first responders that are coming. And all of that is done through software, which is now available. The leaps and bounds on this stuff, the boundaries on this stuff just keep to be broken down more and more all the time. And so Councilor Flaherty and I have been working to update Boston's 911 program with the mayor's office and the police commissioner and school police. And so things are happening there as well. And I'm very encouraged and I'm very honored, Michael, to be a member of the city council. I've been elected and reelected 10 times at large. It's a great honor. It's the honor of my life, other than...
you place very highly in the roles, too. I mean, you get a lot of votes.
Thank you, sir. And so we go on. And I haven't been up on Fairmount because we're remodeling our house. And so we got out for a couple of months.
You're hiding in Westbury, living. I understand. Is that right?
Hancock Village. It's a furnished apartment. We just took our clothes
and
our pet.
Just to be close to Gary's Liquor. I see that. All right.
Anyway, Michael.
We shouldn't get out before we talk about snow a bit. Now, is the city council going to be in on that? I mean, up here, at least, people were just, when you're down to one lane on, Milton Avenue and every place else, is there a chance that we could get more like Montreal and get the damn snow off the street?
Is that the city council's business?
Yeah.
Well, it should be. If it isn't, we all know where we've been. We've fallen down on the job, and one of those areas has been snow removal. And we're leasing 4 snow melting machines. We'd like to have one in every city council district. So we're going to look at the capital budget to purchase those. And we were actually looking at the best practices of Toronto, which has these trucks with conveyor belts that go down the streets, and they feed the snow up and in and melt them all in one process. And so we're looking at that, and we're working with my friend Councilor Tim McCarthy on that. And there's always room for improvement, and you're never too old to learn. And we're learning. And we think, we're the hardy northerners, and we get real winter. Well, we've been tested this winter, and
we sure have. No, all my friends from all around the country keep talking about that, and then half of them say, "Send us the snow." People in Idaho are saying, "Send me the snow. We don't get enough." And in New Mexico, they've had like 17 years of drought. My sister says, "Send me all of your snow."
I know.
I would if I could.
Well, thank you, Michael.
All right, as always,
it's a pleasure to talk
thank
to you.
Thank you.
And
good
to
see talk
you
to you again. I'll see you down at the bar. So. Okay, thank you very much, and best of luck on the election. I expect you to win.
Well, thank you, Michael.
Right.
I'll see you on Warden Day. Thanks.
Good afternoon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Round up the usual suspects.